Ever had a stranger ask to borrow your mobile phone? Were you helpful or suspicious? Mike Foster doesn't want to come off as unfriendly, but he advises extreme caution when it comes to sharing mobile devices with strangers. He has a great story to illustrate that point and more in this episode of the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with the J of A, and this episode is part two of a conversation with Foster, a cybersecurity expert. Before you hear our conversation, here's a word from our sponsor.
KPMG is committed to continuously identifying and implementing innovative approaches and tools to help deliver and enhance a quality audit. KPMG Audit, dedicated to trust, committed to quality. Visit audit.kpmg.us to learn more.
This is Neil Amato, and I'm joined on the podcast today by cybersecurity expert Mike Foster. Mike, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Neil.
So let's talk some about simple computer and phone hygiene. Whether that's a word or not, that's what we're going to call it.
Yeah, one of the best things you can do, just like hygiene is a good word, because with hygiene, you scrub the dirt off, something I need to be able to teach my 10-year-old son. But that equates to, it's a good analogy for what you need to do in your computer. One thing to know is that every program you have installed on the computer is a potential toehold for an attacker to get into that computer. So if you have 50 programs, those are 50 toeholds for an attacker to climb up and get in your system. You want to remove your toeholds as much as possible. So at work, that may be a program that you used to use and you don't use it anymore. Maybe an old accounting package or whatever it is. That program, if you only access it once every 6 months, that program needs to be uninstalled from your system. You can put it on an old computer back in the back room, so if anyone ever needs to go access it, they can pull it up and see it, but it needs to be off your network. People use other things. You buy a new computer, it lots of times has a free faxing program on there. It has a light version of some contact management tool. All those programs must be uninstalled, removed. So what organizations, your listeners, may do at the company is they may take a brand new computer, get it just the way they want, uninstall all the software, and then they make what's called a golden image of that computer. In other words, they take a snapshot of all the data stored in that computer. It's the operating system, the patches that are installed, the programs that are allowed, and then they keep that golden image on a drive. Now when the company buys new computers, all the company has to do is just deploy that golden image out to each one of those new computers, and IT doesn't have to spend all that time cleaning up the computer. In fact, there's another huge benefit. That is, if you have a user and their computer, your user's computer starts malfunctioning, really there should be no troubleshooting of computers anymore. The days of troubleshooting computers are gone. If a computer acts the least bit strange, what should happen immediately is that golden image should be deployed back to the computer to reset it back to quote-unquote new condition. And that new condition is where you want to be, because that's going to block out the hackers. Then that helps with hygiene quite a bit. There are a tremendous number of things that you can protect on a computer just by removing extra stuff. We talked about how important it was to patch Java and Flash. Well, if you haven't installed Java and Flash, or rather you've removed them because they're almost always there, then you don't have to patch Java anymore. You don't have to patch Flash anymore because they're just not there. So clean off everything you don't need. That'd be one of the great answers to your hygiene question.
So what is a mouse jiggler, and why should it scare people who work on computers?
A mouse jiggler is used to defeat the automatic locking of screens. A whole lot of companies, especially to comply with a lot of regulations, computers are set so if one of your workers in your company stands up and walks away from their computer after a set number of minutes, maybe it's 2 minutes, maybe it's 10 minutes, I hope it's not longer than that, but their computer will lock and require a password to get back in. So when the employee comes back from down the hall or lunch or wherever they went, they just enter their password and they're logged on again because the computer was able to sense the user was gone. If an attacker, maybe even someone in the office, decides they want to steal information off that computer, the attacker just waits till someone leaves and goes down the hall, and then the attacker can slip into the room and use the computer as if they were your listener, even though it's not your listener, it's some bad guy, unless they get in after the screen locks. So what an attacker will do is they will use a little tool called a mouse jiggler. And you can get one as software, but the one that's more fun and the one I know you're talking about is a little tiny USB device. They will slide that USB device into a USB port, which on a laptop you might notice, but not if it's the laptop's connected to a docking station, and almost never if it's a desktop computer. They plug that in, and what the mouse jiggler does is every couple minutes, the mouse gets moved, it jiggles. It gets jiggled by this device, and it may only move the mouse one or two pixels, meaning little dots on the screen. So your user's not going to be able to notice that the mouse moved. However, the computer notices, and therefore the computer thinks someone's sitting there, and the computer will never auto-lock. So if somebody wants to get in your data, and maybe someone walks out of the office to go home at night, assuming their own computer's going to lock, the attacker just had to have slipped in there at some point, put in the mouse jiggler into the computer, your listener goes home for the night, the employee just had to stay in quote-unquote work late, and they can go in and access your computer all night long if they want to. So it's really important that when you stand up and walk away from your computer, you manually lock your keyboard every time, even if you're just going to go down the hall to get a cup of coffee. And the easiest way to do that in Windows is to hold down the Windows key and tap L, as in lock. Or one of the other many ways you can lock Windows, but that's the one we like the best. It's very fast. And then any of your listeners that have Macs, you go into the preferences and you set up something in a Mac called Hot Corners. With Hot Corners, all you have to do is run your mouse up to a corner of the screen, and then it can perform some function. So you would set one of the corners to perform the function of start the screensaver. So when people, they manually lock their screen by running the mouse up to the corner.
Why should we treat our mobile phones like our toothbrushes?
Well, obviously, you wouldn't want to share your toothbrush with someone else because of the risk of infection and all kinds of other horrible things. Your phones are the same way. You don't want to share your phone with someone because if that person gets their phone, your phone in their physical possession, they can do all kinds of things to own that phone. In other words, take control of the phone themselves. A common thing that happens is if someone attacks your phone, one of the common things that happens when they attack your phone is to put spyware on your phone so they can record what phone calls you make. They can actually record the call itself. They can take pictures with your camera, so you want to be careful where your camera points or keep it covered up, like I see you do on your computer, which is a wonderful thing. They're going to be able to infect your phone with stuff you would never want. For example, I fly a lot, a whole lot, and I used to live in a city close to San Francisco. And there is an Admiral's Club for American Airlines, which is one of the airline lounges where you can go in and relax and get ready for your flight, or if you're like a lot of your listeners, you probably go in there and send, receive email and work on presentations and do work while you're there. When I walked in one day, I saw a guy way in the corner of the Admiral's Club. If you've ever been to San Francisco Admiral's Club, you know that you walk in the door, there's a neat little fireplace on the right-hand side, and you come around the corner, and back in the far right corner, there's a chair and a little round table. If you go there, that's where this guy sat. He had two laptops out, all these different power adapters, a phone, a tablet. I looked at him and I immediately suspected him as being up to no good. Because for one thing, I'm the only guy I've ever seen in the Admiral's Club with more than one laptop open at any time. And I'm wondering, why would he have everything facing outside so no one could really see what he was doing? Well, this guy, while I was working, he came over after about 5 minutes and said, "Sir," I ignored him. He said, "Sir," I still ignored him. So he kind of stuck his head around where he could see my face and he goes, "Sir," and he said, "I have a question to ask you." Well, I was busy and I've already kind of got a label suspicious. So I said, "Thank you. I'm not taking questions today." And I went back to what I was doing. Well, it didn't slow him down one bit. He said, "Oh, that's okay. But I just want to see if I can borrow your phone because I'm trying to make a transfer of money to my bank and they won't let me do it unless I phone in and confirm that it's me." And I looked over at him and I said, "Please go away and don't ever talk to me again," because he wants to hold my phone, which, as we all know now, that is a huge risk. Well, if you've ever seen that long table in the Admiral's Club where I was sitting, the bar is right behind me, and there was a gentleman at the bar who was listening to this conversation. I'm going to refer to that gentleman as the Good Samaritan, because he sees this going on and he drops his jaw and he gives me the stink eye. He's like, "What is your problem, dude?" I just look at him and shake my head. This Good Samaritan tells the guy who's asking you the phone, "Sir, you can borrow my phone. You know, I don't know what's wrong about that rude guy over there," meaning me, the rude guy. He says, "You can use my phone." And the guy runs over, a big smile, and he says, "Thank you for letting me borrow your phone. Would you please unlock it, put in your passcode?" Which the Good Samaritan was happy to do. And then the bad guy goes and retreats to the corner. Well, it didn't take 2 minutes till the bad guy was back up the Good Samaritan and said, I don't know what happened. Your phone locked. Would you please put in the code again? Now, obviously, what happened is the attacker was installing software on the phone, and part of installing the software is you basically, one way of explaining is jailbreak the phone so you can do things that the phone manufacturer would never have intended you to do. And as a result of that, the phone reboots, and it comes up and asks for it. But, you know, he just said, I don't know why it rebooted. So the Good Samaritan types in the code again on the third trip up of the bad guy to the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan said, look, I'm sorry you have to keep coming up here. I'm going to make this easy for you. Here's my code. And told the bad guy the code. And I'm over here listening out of the corner of my ear, just shaking my head. If I go tell the Good Samaritan you're doing something wrong, he just accuses me of being even a bigger jerk. So you just kind of have to sit there and feel bad for the guy. But after a while, the guy in the corner came back and said, thank you for your phone. I really appreciate you. Have a nice day. Well, I happened to see the Good Samaritan a couple weeks later in the Admirals Club. They must live in the Bay Area as well. I went over to him and I said, sir, I'd like to ask you a question. And you could kind of see he thought for a minute and turned around and he says, you're the guy, you're the jerk. And I said, oh, maybe, I'm glad you remember who I am. I said, by the way, have you noticed anything odd happening with your phone? And he kind of got this look on his face and he said, you know, AT&T's been calling me a couple times a week saying there's strange stuff happening on my phone. And see, these spy programs, they can even place phone calls. They can send email messages. They allow the guy in the corner to totally control that phone. And I told the Good Samaritan about that. And you could slowly see the color draining from his face. And he became very pale. It's like, sir, you better sit down there. And he asked what he could do after that. He says, can I change my phone number? I said, that won't help a bit. Your phone's infected. He said, can I go buy a new phone? And I said, sure you could. But when most people buy a new phone, the first thing they do is synchronize it or back up and restore from their old phone to their new one. That's going to mean the spy program gets transferred as well. So what he needed to do, and I explained, if you want a new phone, and his was really old anyway, I said, if you want to get a new phone, go buy it. But this time, don't restore from your old phone. Don't transfer the data. Download things fresh to that phone and forget about the restore from the backup. That will most likely keep the spyware program from coming onto your new phone. He asked me how he could tell if his phone was infected. To me, it was pretty obvious, but I told him, you're not going to see an icon on your screen. You're not going to know. It's not going to say the spy program's name. It's just people are going to know things that they shouldn't know, or your phone's going to be misbehaving in ways that you can't figure out why. And of course, the solution to this is what you said earlier, treating your phone like a toothbrush. You never, ever let your phone be out of your sight. And at night, if you're at home, make sure you have a passcode on your phone or hide the phone. If you got a teenager like I do, you better put the phone in a safe or something. But make sure no one gets access to that phone, because once they have it, they could potentially do bad things. And there's some passcodes to never use. One of the passcodes to never use would be 0000. You would never use 1111 or 1234. People use some really, really silly passwords. 2580 is another one because it goes right down the middle. Most people use something simple to remember. You need to make sure yours is not easy to remember. So that's a nutshell about physical security on phones is crucial.
That's great. That's great. And we'll close on this question because I think a lot of people do this. Why is it not safe to connect to a coffee shop's Wi-Fi, and what is the alternative to that?
Great question. If you connect to a coffee shop's Wi-Fi, then you're basically on the same network with everybody else in that coffee shop. The same with a hotel, the same with an airport, the same with anywhere else you're on a network with other people. When you're on a network with other people, you could imagine that's akin to you plugging an Ethernet cable into that other person's computer. And it's very likely you would never do that on purpose, go up to them and say, may I connect a cable to your computer? Because you would realize if their computer is infected with a virus, now it's a good chance that virus will infect your computer as well. So it's the same kind of danger. Even if you use a VPN to connect to your office, that VPN is not protecting you from getting infected by someone else. It is protecting your data, so it protects your privacy if it's set up right. But it's not protecting your security, which is something completely different. So the alternative is, number one, you need to turn off your Wi-Fi, because there are actually ways that if you're walking around with your computer, an attacker can connect to your computer if your wireless is turned on without your knowledge. You have no idea that they're connected to you, and they are. So that's why you must go into your settings and either put your device in airplane mode or at least turn off Wi-Fi It's got an on-off setting. Be sure you use the off setting. The solution or the alternative, what's much better, is to use your mobile phone. If you're going to use a laptop, use your mobile phone to connect to the internet. So obviously, if you have your phone or your tablet, you're going to connect from your phone or tablet through your carrier, whether that's AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, or someone else. That's how you're going to connect to your carrier. Do not get on the Wi-Fi wherever you are. Just stay off of it. And if you have a laptop and you want to connect to the internet, use your phone's hotspot function so that your laptop connects to your phone wirelessly. And then that wireless signal is sent by the phone through your carrier to the internet. That's much more secure. And be sure and keep your phone close to your laptop. There are things attackers can do that if you're using your phone, even then they can suck you over into their own control, but they have to have a stronger signal than you. And that's not that difficult to do with big antennas and high power boosters. Unless you have your phone sitting right next to your laptop, nobody's going to go into that much trouble. There's so many other people in the coffee shop, that's who they're going to go after. I mean, unless you're somebody very, very important, then they're probably not going to go beyond that problem or beyond that difficulty for them. So use your phone to connect and keep your Wi-Fi turned off at all times when you're not using your Wi-Fi.
Mike, that's excellent. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for spreading the word. And I encourage all your listeners to go tell everyone they can tell, because we need to make the world more secure.
That was cybersecurity expert Mike Foster. For more J of A podcasts, find us on journalofaccountancy.com/podcast, Podomatic, iTunes, and other podcast platforms. I'm Senior Editor Neil Amato. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.